Okay, we're going to begin our special class on happiness, self-worth, and overcoming negativity. And I want to ask you two questions. And I want you to write the answers down. This is your piece of paper. It has nothing to do with me. You don't have a pen? So get one. So I'm going to ask you one question, and I want you to write the answer for yourself. And think about it. I'm not collecting these papers. I don't want to ever see these papers. This is your paper, and you can throw it out after class. But I want you to take the question seriously and write a serious answer. And question number one is, you could do it however you like. Each person should ask himself, what am I worth? No.
No.
Later, we'll talk. Right now, let people think. So I said there are two questions, and the second question I'm going to ask you relates directly to the first question, and that is, who says?
You said what you're worth?
I asked you what you're worth. Ask yourself, what am I worth? And the second question is, who says? Says who?
Oh, says
who says that's what you're worth? Now that you answered those two questions, I want you to take 2 minutes and look at what you wrote and think about it. Look at what you wrote. What are you worth? And who says?
Your timing?
And think about it. Yes, I'm timing.
Okay.
I have a question. I don't expect any of you to raise your hands, but maybe I'm wrong. If someone were to ask me this question, I would say no. But I figure maybe there are those among you who are different than me. Is there anyone that would feel comfortable reading what they wrote? I wouldn't. I'm telling you point blank, I would not. If I answered these truthfully, I would not read what I wrote. But if there's anyone that feels comfortable reading it, so then I think there's a lot we could learn from it. Is there anyone that feels comfortable? Those raise of hands, you guys. Okay. So we'll go around the room. Go ahead.
What am I worth? To my friends, I suspect that I'm worth a lot. I give a lot to my inner circle.
And who says?
I do. I know how much I'm worth to my family and friends, and I think about, you know, their what you know they would be missing if I was.
What am I worth? Truly, I don't feel like I can really judge that. I would only feel worth something if someone else feels I'm worth something. And who says that the above is the case? I mean, I really care about what those who are close to me think.
Okay. How about...
What am I worth? I wrote down God's love. Said, if I fail in my mission on earth, God has the love to teach me the lessons I need to learn, whether in the macro or the micro. The micro being, if I do an abeira, I feel the response from God. See the responsibility on the macro. We know that Gilgal exists, where if we fail on a mission on this earth in this lifetime, we could be set back to a different lifetime, a different plant, a different animal, a different person itself, to learn our lesson in the end, which we'll all learn our lessons, our bigger missions. succeed, God rewards me both on the micro and the macro, within my life with goodness, with this energy, with this love, and hopefully on the macro in the next life. And who says? God says he showed me the signs. Torah says so, for example, in the Shema, where it talks about reward and punishment, and me. I feel I see the results of carrying out what I believe to be God's wishes.
Shakwa. Tov.
Okay. Man Shabbat, Ma'arach Shani, Amidot Shevo.
Shakach. Anyone else? I wouldn't. I'm telling you. So you, I'm 100%. If you guys don't want to read it, I wouldn't read mine either. What?
I have no problem already.
Go ahead, Malachi.
My soul says so. I can feel it. It's the ultimate goal of my life so far. And I strongly believe that it's also connected with what Hashem wants for me to do and what he, blessed be his name, knows that I'm capable of becoming in the future. So I follow it and I work on this path till I achieve it.
Bah. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Onward. We're going to discuss a lot of things, and then in the end, maybe we'll have a chance to come back and revisit these questions. This class, to my mind, the topic is maybe the most important topic of our generation. It is maybe the most challenging topic of our generation, and I don't know if we will do it justice in the class. I want to divide our discussion into two areas. One being the root of happiness, and the other being external tools towards happiness. And I leave it to you to think about which is the root and which are the externals. For example, I think you'll agree with me that if we put on music that calms a person and you go to a wedding, you're happy, that's external. Or is it? Your friend compliments you. Is that external or internal? Is that the essence of happiness? Or is that external stimuli giving happiness? You succeed. You're working on a project and you succeed. Is that external or is that internal? And I want us to maybe work our way around the definition. And I'm not sure how important the definition really is, but we'll touch on it. We live in a generation where people are depressed. We live in a generation where people are unhappy, are dissatisfied. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that many people wake up in the morning and have a challenge to get out of bed, and have a challenge to look positively at the day that's ahead. There are many drugs or herbal remedies that are supposed to give you the zest of life. Okay, I'm not discussing them. I'm just saying that the advent of all these things is reflective of a state of mind that we're in. You could say we're all missing vitamin D and that's why we lack a zest for life, but I don't think so. I think there's something else going on here. Let's begin maybe with a question that's a very dangerous question, but I'm not asking you this question. I want to point out where most people exist on this question. Imagine Hashem came to a person and told him, you have another day, and then you're with me, and you should know I'm so happy with you. You've led such a great life. You're going to be in the front row in the Garden of Eden. For generations, people are going to talk about what kind of tzaddik you are. You've made the greatest impact on humanity that can be expected. And your time is up. And not only that, I'm going to reward you and give you more of the Garden of Eden than you've accomplished, because I know you want to accomplish more in your life. So I'm going to consider it as though you've accomplished all those things that you wanted to accomplish and didn't accomplish. What would the average person say? Yeah, you think he'd say no way? I think the average person would say, why do I have to wait till tomorrow? I'm done, God, take it. I'm back.
There is one question.
Okay, I want to say goodbye to my wife and kids. Okay.
Apart from this, generally, where Hashem will send the person, would he be alone or not?
I don't have time in this class to discuss it. Forgive me if you want. Tomorrow we can discuss it, but it has nothing to do with what we're discussing now.
Because it's really important.
That's very good, but it has nothing to do with this. I think the average person lives in a perpetual state of giving up. And so if only he's given an out, which is a legitimate out, God just told you, you did great. So then, okay. So I think you'll agree with me that a happy and healthy person shouldn't be that way. I think we would like to be in a state where every day is so precious that if we could, we'd say, God, give me another one. I still have things to do in life. And I think that my life is important, and that is maybe point number one. My life is important. I liked what Gilad said. There's a whole philosophy in that. What would the world be like without me? I am important. And if you want to know point number one that we have to remember in the pursuit of happiness, that is that I am important. One of the greatest weaknesses we have is that feeling that I'm not important. And who cares if I'm alive or dead? And maybe the world would be better if I were dead. And if it wouldn't be better, well, how much am I doing when I'm here? And that really stems from another frustration, which we'll get to, or maybe we should get to now. But I want to just develop this point on one more front and then get back to this. So we said, if we're going to discuss point number one, we have markers here. Okay. I am important. Okay. The description I just gave you actually happened in world history. That description is a description of God's conversation with Moshe Rabbeinu. God comes to Moshe Rabbeinu and says to him, it's time to go. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't say, obuptidoo. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want to go into the land of Israel. And God says, you have it. I'm giving you all the reward as though you were there and did all the mitzvos. So he's getting not only all the mitzvahs he's accomplished, the greatest man that ever walked the planet, the greatest prophet that ever lived. He has it all. The Torah is Torah's Moshe. Look at what he's done. And God tells him, I'll even give you mitzvahs you wanted to do and didn't do. Time to go. What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? I don't want to go. What was he missing? He wasn't missing Bermuda shorts. He wasn't missing a martini. He wasn't missing an afternoon in the sun. No. Moshe Rabbeinu saw value in what he did. And that is point number two. Not only am I important, what I'm doing is important. Two. So we said point number one, I am important. Point number two, what I'm doing is important. So a lot of people will tell me, but I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not important. And what I'm doing is not too important. So we have to get to that. But we also have to know that throughout world history, this has been a challenge. It's a far greater challenge in our day and age, and we'll discuss why in a minute. But it's always been a challenge. David mentioned earlier that Hashem tells David HaMelech, Tov Yom B'Chatzerecha Me'alef. And so we have King David who desperately wants to build a temple, and God tells him no. So his life has been revolving around a certain goal, and God says, you're not going to have it. And if we're going to talk about our frustrations, one of our great frustrations in life is that we look to places that we cannot achieve. David HaMelech looks to a goal that he cannot achieve. So Hashem tells him, but I value what you can achieve. Tov yom b'chatzerecha, I prefer one day of your service, me'elef, from 1,000 sacrifices in the temple. Why are you focused on something you can't do? What you're doing is so much better. And so, if we're talking about what I'm doing is important, part of that is to realize I don't have to accomplish what I cannot accomplish. One of our great frustrations is that we've set goals for ourselves that are beyond our reach. So rule number three, don't aspire. For what you can't.
The Rolling Stones have a song. You can't always get what you want.
That's not what we're saying. That's not at all what we're saying. We're saying we have to know our limitations, and just like you're not frustrated because you can't fly, you don't have to be frustrated because you don't have the brains of the guy next to you. We had a guy here in the GEAR program a few years ago. They used to cry bitterly why he isn't finished with his GEAR program. Other people entered it and finished it before him. He'd been here a year. Other people came in and 3 months later they were done. And he was here and he needed time. And he was so frustrated. And at the time, Rav Listman said a line that I took very harshly. And Rav Listman said, you have to tell him, I had a close relationship with him, Rav Listman said, you have to tell him that he cannot gauge himself by other people. The fact that they could accomplish it more quickly is not reflective of him. They came in under certain circumstances. It worked for them. That has nothing to do with him. And I didn't have the heart to tell him. I felt like, how could you tell a guy that? But you know what? It's a rule for life. Rav Listman was 100% right. The guy ended up, he got his gear. But it wasn't in his favor that that message was withheld from him. As hard as it was to say, he should have heard it. I didn't say it. I left it to Rav Listman and he told me I should be the one to say it, and I wasn't mature enough to appreciate how right the statement was. But it's a rule in life. We spend our life sometimes being upset because we can't fly. But we weren't given the tools to fly. Sometimes we look at someone else who has something and we say, why not me? And the answer is, you weren't given those gifts. You can't. I came to yeshiva, I wanted to learn and sleep 3 hours a night. So that's exactly what I did, and I collapsed after 4 days. So I said, it must be my desire, it must be I have to want it more. So I tried it again, and again, and again, and I spent close to a half a year fighting my body in utter frustration. I wanted to learn all day and sleep only 3 hours a night. But I wasn't given those strengths. And I didn't have that wisdom. So I was very frustrated because all the stories I had heard had been that the giants in Torah, they slept 3 hours a night. I want to be a giant in Torah, but I can't go on 3 hours of sleep a night. But you know what? Very often in life, we spend our life being frustrated and saddened because we feel we cannot attain certain goals and we don't put too much importance on what we have accomplished. I really should be something else. I really should accomplish something else. And that's not true. I was given certain tools. I was given certain strengths. And the question is, am I utilizing them? And we'll get back to these points in a second. Yes, Malachi.
Okay. How can we know what we can achieve and what we cannot achieve? In my mind, I always had a person which was a bit taller than 1.5 meters and 50 centimeters, who was born in France, in Corsica, in fact. And after the French Revolution, he ended up being the emperor of that country, defeating four of the biggest, of the five biggest superpowers at the time, and had for almost 15 years the whole Europe going down the hill. So if he was putting, because he was of a poor family, he was putting a small goal to achieve small things. But because he put in a big goal, he wrote his name in history.
Try.
The main changes.
Try.
So it's not bad to put some high expectations.
No problem. Try.
But that's why the tradition are mostly, if we don't achieve them, we will achieve bigger, bigger things. If even not you, exactly what we want to do.
No one's talking about the question of whether you should try for high things or not. Try. But you shouldn't be disappointed if your capacity in life is to do something else. It says there are certain things God weeps for every day. And one of them is people who are in the wrong place in life. It says every day God sheds three tears. And one of them is for the people who are striving up the wrong tree. They're trying very hard, but for the wrong thing. And so, yes, we have to strive for greatness, but we also have to know that we have our limitations. And just as you can't fly, and you shouldn't be too upset that you don't have wings, you also shouldn't be upset because you don't have someone else's gifts. We each have our gifts and our capacities. Yeah.
So I can understand that Moshe had her teeth, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want it. It seems when he came to the Arya, it seems that he didn't want to get that message from God and go down and see Pakati. So I can understand that with Hashem Chaper. Our projects, and then Hashem comes and says, I have written that for you.
I don't understand the question.
So I'm saying, in light of that, sometimes we make our own goals, and it seems that Hashem has different ideas for us.
Right.
So how can I understand that He comes to us and He's coming to say a different thing? Like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had a message to say, Pakat Pakati, and it seems He will be very hard for Him to go on that path.
There was another Rav named Mishapop the other day. He said something pretty wise. He came to Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem. He said, if you have goals, you should try those goals until literally God tells you Himself to stop. Right? So what does that mean exactly? Does God come down from the sky and tell you point blank to stop what you're doing? Not necessarily. If you inside yourself get to the level where you're satisfied with where you've reached and you said, okay, I surrender, it's not for me, and that's God also giving us the intellect in order to know it's enough.
Fine. I don't think there's one formula, but I think that's the general direction. We have to try. And sometimes realize and be open to the fact that this isn't the route I'm supposed to go. Fine. David HaMelech also wanted certain things, and God told him no. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted certain things, and God told him no. The question is, what happens next? Meaning, you guys are going back to point one. I assume point one was a given. You have a goal, you have a dream, try. No one's telling you not to try. My point was, what happens when you realize it's not going to happen? When you realize you're not going to be able to do it. So then sometimes people spend their whole life unhappy. There's this gnawing feeling, I should be something else, I should be somewhere else, when it's not legitimate. You can't be something else somewhere else. You tried, you did your best, you see you can't, fine. But here comes the real whammy. And maybe this is what some of you guys were alluding to. And that is that deep down inside, very often we know that if we would have focused on the long-term goal and not been sidetracked by short-term desires, we could have accomplished differently. And life is a series of challenges where a person has a choice between short-term and long-term. I want to hit the snooze button and sleep another half hour. I'm going to miss Shacharis. Right now, I want that half hour of sleep. The rest of the day, I'm going to kick myself for missing Shacharis. I want to get that half hour, and I won't get a shower this morning. The rest of the day, I'm going to walk around and feel stinky because I didn't get a shower this morning. I'm taking a small example, but there are bigger examples, and it plays itself out repeatedly in life. Am I going to study for the test in a methodical way? Am I going to take notes? Am I going to go to sleep on time? We always have that short-term challenge. Right now, I feel like doing this. And I know that for the long-term benefit, if I forgo what I want in the short-term, I'm going to get that much more. So first of all, let's remember that formula. Life is a series of challenges between short-term and long-term. And you should know that some people claim, some secular books on personal growth claim, that the formula for happiness is when a person can forgo the short-term and strive for the long-term. And when a person has that sense of satisfaction that he's really working towards his goal, that is what some people define as happiness. I'm not saying I would define it that way, but it's definitely a component. We've discussed many times that Rav Saadia Gaon says that is the book of Proverbs in a nutshell. That challenge between short-term and long-term. So first of all, we have to internalize that idea. And secondly, we have to deal with the question of what about my real failings, which are the goals that I can accomplish and I repeatedly don't. And that's where we're going to focus tonight. Yes?
There's a famous Jewish-American political commentator, Dennis Prager, who devotes every week to happiness. And one of the things he says is that if you can think of happiness like a happy scale, right, 1 to 10. And, one being you're just like down in the dumps, you can't move or think, or even you just want to be asleep or don't want to be in the world, right? And a 10 is like this ecstatic, super la-di-da feeling that's like, way out there, right? He's like, very often people try and pursue these 10s, right? They go to parties and whatnot, they're in this, there's this emphatic, ecstatic, like, being destroyed, right? Like a hive. But what follows a 10? Usually a 1 or a 3. The next day you've got, what they call a hangover. Or he's like, truly happy people are long-term. People who, instead of trying to pursue the 10, trying their best to stay at the 6, or the fucking on the 6, or maybe even the 7, so that they keep what they do have. You don't try to pursue something way high up there, because if you do, you start off even lower than what you have right now.
Okay. I'm listening.
In our generation, there are mostly two kinds of people. People that set big goals, real big goals that they cannot achieve, and they play dangerous games, and they indeed end up in the bottom of the bottoms. And there are people that, because they're afraid to do this, they stay in the bottom, being afraid to climb one more step up to the ladder. What I think that our generation is missing is the people that walk in the middle way, that want to go to the top, but through a straight line that goes to the top.
I hear. So I think that this brings us to a point I thought we'd get to later, but we could discuss it now. We discussed that we have repeated challenges between the long term and the short term. We are bombarded with messages through the media and through much of the Western culture that revolve around short-term happiness. Real happiness is a byproduct of a productive life. Short-term happiness is, I got a new car, I got a new cell phone, I got a... That's not happiness. It's a thrill, and then how am I going to pay it off? Now, part of the reason why people are dissatisfied with life is because people are disenchanted. I have the iPhone, but I'm not as happy as I thought I'd be. Well, I'd be very upset if I didn't have it, because all my friends have it. But I'm not as happy as I thought I would be now that I have it. So there's this perpetual search for the solution. But there's more to it than that. I asked you a question at the beginning of our discussion tonight. What am I worth? I said each person should ask themselves that question. What am I worth? And the second question is, who says? And I think that maybe we should reverse the questions. Maybe we should begin by asking, who says what I'm worth? Who defines what I'm worth? And then we'll talk about what I'm worth. Every one of us has failures. We're going to come back to that question. What am I worth and who says what I'm worth? I want to leave it as a thought for now. Every one of us has failures. Every one of us has successes. And I could tell you, I have a file at home. I have a physical file, and in the last 3 years I started developing a virtual file through emails. I call it the Idud file, the encouragement file. It's a file to remind me I'm not the worst person on the planet. Because I have those days when I need to be reminded I'm not the worst person on the planet. I have those mess-ups where suddenly I feel like I can't even face the world after what I did. Or I don't feel like facing the world after what I did. It's not just feeling stupid, it's feeling terrible. And then, like everyone else, I have to remind myself, I'm not the worst person in the world. And it's not easy. So the question is, why is it not easy? And here, I think we should discuss a little bit about Ayin Hara, bad eye. What is Lashon Hara, a bad tongue? So before we move forward on that, I want to frame the discussion with the following. Imagine you ask someone, what are you worth? And the person says, well, my mother always says you're a glutton like your father. My mother always tells me I'm a failure because I only get a 98. My friends always call me fatso. My classmates call me baldy. My neighbor keeps telling me that I make noise at night and I keep everyone awake. Would you say that's how we should define a person's worth? How many people, if you ask them about their self-worth, would tell you, well, my wife says I'm annoying. How many people, if you ask them about their self-worth, would be able to tell you, I'm not worth too much. My boss says I'm a failure, and he's about to fire me. And I don't think I could find a job. Now, what do all of these have in common? That we define self-worth based on what people are telling us. And it's very hard to live in a society and not be affected by what other people are telling us. But if I asked you, who says what you're worth? What should the answer to that be? And we'll get back to that. Imagine you ask a person, what are you worth? And he says, well, my teammates all just told me you're so inconsiderate of other people. Imagine you ask someone, what do you think you're worth? And he said, my wife just told me I'm so haughty that she wants a divorce. Is that supposed to define for us our self-worth? And now I want us to zone in to the common denominator of all of these. And the common denominator is not that it is someone else talking. I think you've all seen by now that each person has zoned in on one fault. And it could be they're right in zoning in on that fault. But I'm a human being. There's more to me than my faults. And even if you'll enumerate five faults, and you'll be right on all five counts, there is still more to who I am than those faults. What is Lashon Hara in Tanakh? The prohibition against Lashon Hara is Lo Tisa Shem Hashav. Don't lie. But I'm not lying. I'm telling the truth. Lashon Hara is when I tell the truth. Right, but Lashon Hara is when you blow it out of proportion. Lashon Hara is when you zone in and you focus on that. So we're all people and we all have blemishes. And we all know that with a camera, you could get a guy in a very compromising situation. You could zone in on his nose and say, here, there's Netan Ofrengen, though. Look at his big nose. You could zone in on his bald head. You could zone in on a lot of things and then say, that's him. Is that him? Or is there more to him than what you've zoned in on? So we all know there's more to him, and we all know that you can portray him in a very compromising light. But that's not fair. But that's what we do to ourselves. So yes, we can look back at ourselves, look at our history and say, you know, there's a recurring fault here. And we do that to ourselves. As I mentioned to someone tonight, just this week, I was sitting with my wife, and I said, you know, it's very tough. Because when I look back at my history, I see that there is recurring weaknesses that I haven't overcome. I see it in myself. And then I look forward and I say, am I ever going to do it? So there's this capacity that we have to look at ourselves with an Ayin Hara or Lashon Hara, where we can zone in on what's negative and make believe that's everything, but it isn't. So now you can all easily see the way out of that, and that is to be able to say, there's much more to me than that which is negative. And that is a step. It's not the whole picture. So there's more to me. And part of resolving what's wrong about me is to focus. And part of the reason we don't resolve it is because we never choose to focus on it. A person knows he's always late. If he chose to work on that for real, for 5 months, he wouldn't work on 15 traits. He'd work just on that. He'd accomplish it. But that's not his focus. His focus is answering the emails, so he misses the bus, so he shows up late. His focus is being on the phone with friends, and we justify it. But that's a choice. And we're not here to really discuss how to rectify the situation with regards to developing ourselves. What we are here to discuss is how do we accomplish happiness, and how do we deflect negative comments? How do we overcome negativity? So if we realize that negativity is an illegitimate focus on that which is wrong, so then we've already taken a few steps in the right direction. No one's saying we're perfect. We said, part of it is realizing our own importance. Part of it is realizing what we do that is positive. Part of it is don't aspire for what you can't do. But then what happens when you look at the stuff and you say, I could have done it, I should have done it, and I'm wrong for not having done it? That's when you have to say, but I'm a whole person, and there's so much good about me. We once had a student here at Machon Meir who was tremendously accomplished. He had degrees. He had capacity to contribute a tremendous amount to the world. But he had a mother. A mother who repeatedly told him that he's worthless. A mother who repeatedly told him how everything he does doesn't come up to par because she and her husbands were grade A student geniuses, and he only got 80s, but he passed, and he got degrees, and he had a tremendous diploma in his hand that he could have went out and helped humanity. He had an excellent field to go into, and he had job offers, not only in Israel, from all over the world. But he would spend his time thinking, what's wrong with him? And what hasn't he accomplished? And he'd keep hearing in his mind, what's wrong? So I gave him the following assignment. I said to him, I want you to take two pieces of paper. On one of them, I want you to write everything bad you have to say about yourself. Everything you could say bad about yourself, write. You're lazy, you don't accomplish enough, you're not a straight A student, you don't get hundreds, you're a little bit too bashful, you're a little bit too timid. Write everything bad you have to say, everything bad you've ever heard and everything bad you could think of. Put it on one paper. Now take another piece of paper and write for me what's good. And here's your homework. Take a piece of paper of what's bad and keep it in your pocket. It's not what you thought I'd say, right? You thought I'd say burn it. No, I said put it in your pocket. Now as you go through the day, every time you have a bad thought and you think to yourself, I'm lazy, tell yourself, wait a second, I said that already. It's written. Stop. You've said it. You're repeating yourself. Make a check next to every time you have that thought. And look at the end of the day. How many times did you blame yourself and say, I'm lazy? How many times did you blame yourself and say, I don't do things all the way? And every time you start having those thoughts, you have to tell yourself, but I said that already. You're not saying anything new. Keep the note in your pocket just in case you think of something else new that's negative that you didn't say yet. Jot it down. And next time you have that thought, tell yourself, but I know that already. I wrote it down. You're repeating yourself. Cut yourself short. Nip it in the bud. Don't focus on the negative. And this brings us to our next tool, which is the question of what we focus on. And I want to show you a tremendous tool for your whole lives now. Let me ask you a question. You know you have skin just behind your ear? Did you sense that skin a second before I mentioned it? No. Did you sense your pinky of your left foot before I mentioned it? No. Are you listening to that clock ticking in the back of the room? No. At any given moment, our senses are bombarded with stimuli. Every second, we are bombarded with hundreds, if not thousands, of stimuli. You have tremendous area on your hands and feet and face, and even in your mouth. Are you thinking of your tongue as you're sitting here? No. You're not sensing it until you choose to focus on it. We have a choice in our life what to focus on. And if you want to, you could focus right now on what I'm saying, which is what I think you're doing. If you want to, you could focus right now on your left pinky. And suddenly you'll be sensing it very acutely. You could focus on the saliva in your mouth. You could focus on a million things. No, you can't. You could focus on about five. There are approximately five senses you could be focused on at any given time without starting to go crazy. That's why, by the way, if you have a fly buzzing next to your ear, and then you have another one next to the other ear, and you have an itch, and then you have another itch, at some point, you either go berserk. You ever notice? Or you just start to zone them out. Because you can't focus so much. You know, how many itches and scratches and bugs and how many things can you be focused on at the same time? That's why people also go into overload when there's too much pressure. You ever try having a conversation with someone when you're thinking, today my checks are going to bounce, and today I might get fired, and today they might kick me out of the country. There are only so many worries you could juggle in your mind at one time, and there are only so many thoughts. At some point, someone comes to talk to you, and you're sitting there staring into thin space, and you say to him, I'm busy. What are you busy with? Yeah, I'm too busy worried. But you know, this is a tool we could use for the positive. What happens if you think positive? What happens if you think about your own positive traits, your strengths, about the positive things you want to do in the future? We have a choice in life. We have a choice we make repeatedly, and that is, where will we focus our thoughts? It is our choice. If a person gets up in the morning and thinks about his failures, he will be sad. If a person gets up in the morning and thinks about what's positive, he can develop into being happy. And that's why I told this young man to take a second piece of paper where he writes down the positive things. And that piece of paper he was responsible to review 3 times a day. Look at what's positive about yourself. There's another tool. And that is the external. Try smiling. Guys, put a smile on your face. Like this, right? Smile. Very good. Dove, you did it. No, you stopped smiling. Yeah, you. Did you all notice that if you smile, you feel better? Try it. Sometimes we can force ourselves. I don't feel like smiling. Smile anyways. And there's another tool. And that is the speech we use. If we speak positive, we will be positive. If we speak negative, we will be negative. How many times do you use the word hate, dislike, sad? You could use sad words. I once gave a class where I started the class. It was a dark, dreary, dull, sad day. The sky was completely overcast, and it seemed like something terrible would happen. People were walking around gloomily, and you could feel the fog settling in on their shoulders. There was a darkness in the air and a mist, and it was hard to breathe. You notice how you say difficult words, and just the word difficult makes you feel difficult? And now imagine you start a story. It was a sunny, bright day. People were walking around chirpily. The birds were chirping. People walked with a brisk pace as they took in the morning sun. People were walking around town with a happiness about them. You describe a positive scene, you start feeling positive. You describe a negative scene, you start feeling negative. They did this research. I don't remember if it was Harvard or Yale. They gave a group of people a questionnaire to answer. And they told them they're part of an experiment. So they took a group of 100 students and they gave them a questionnaire, and the questionnaire all had a bunch of negative words. They just fabricated questions from negative words, and then they'd have to answer it. Which food do you most greatly dislike? They took negative words, and that was the questionnaire. And then they took 100 students and they gave them a questionnaire with positive words in it. Just positive words. And then when it came time to hand in the questionnaire, they had it set up that the guy in front of the person answering the questionnaire, the guy in front of him in line, would be a real nudnik. He'd be standing there and asking, well, where do I write my name? Over here, and the date. And he'd be procrastinating in line. And the real research was to see the people who had the negative words, how fast would they lose their temper with the guy in front of them in line who was a nudnik? And the people who had the positive words, how patient would they be? And they found that an overwhelming percentage of the people who worked with positive words, when it came their turn in line, when they were standing behind this guy, they had patience, they were able to smile, they were able to wait. And the people who had all the negative words very quickly lost their patience and told the guy to get out of the way and let them hand in their paper. And the real research was to see how they'd react to him, but they didn't know that. We speak positive, we become positive. Positive words affect us positively. And the last point, and maybe this is the most important point, is the spark. What do I mean by the spark? The Rebbe from Piasechna says that sometimes a person sinks so low, I'm sorry, the Rebbe of Slonim says, sometimes a person sinks so low that it feels like he has no redeeming qualities. He can say, there's nothing good left about me. I could tell you everything bad and nothing good. And at that point, he has to remember there's a spark. Hashem gave you life. And if for nothing else, then for the fact that Hashem believes in you. That's a reason to be happy. We start our day every morning with Rabba Emunatecha. What faith Hashem has in us. He put us down on this planet to contend. He put us down on this planet. He has faith that we will do positive things. So I can look at the past and I can be upset about it, or I can focus forward and be happy about it, because at the end of the day, Hashem loves me more than I love myself. It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that anyone could love me more than I love myself. I know we tell ourselves all kinds of harsh words, but the truth is we really love ourselves. Sometimes that self-pity is part of us loving ourselves too. Even when we say we hate ourselves, it's part of, I hate what I haven't accomplished because I love myself and I'd like to be something else. But even to hate ourselves stems from, if you really hated yourself, you'd be apathetic, but you're not. You hate yourself, that's active. That's okay, but that's too deep to go into now. So that's the final point. That Hashem loves us more than we love ourselves. So now let's go back to our original question. And let's reverse the question. Instead of, what am I worth and who says, let's begin with, who says what I'm worth? And then let's discuss what I'm worth. And there are three possible answers to that question. There could be Hashem says what I'm worth. Hashem says I'm worth. And some people might be on the level of David ben David, that shines throughout their life. Hashem says I'm worth something, and that's admirable. I haven't yet reached that level. I can only speak about it theoretically. You know, it's nice words, but to me it's not real. The second level, I think, is a healthy level, and that is what some of you said. I say what I'm worth. I know I'm worth. I know I have capacity, I know I have responsibility, and I know I have to live up to it. And then there's a third level, which I think we have to work out of, but we all live in to some degree, and that is that our surrounding tells us what we're worth. And we are all influenced by that. We have no choice. We live in a society. And if enough people like this guy's mother tell you you're worthless and you can't do it and whatever, so it's very hard to overcome it. But part of the key to overcoming it is the realization that that should not be the center theme. It's a part of it, and it's definitely a part of every person's feeling of self-worth. It's one of the most difficult things to overcome, especially in today's day and age. Every one of us lives with that feeling. Are people going to smile at me or not? Every one of us, if we go, we're standing in line to get a simple ticket. You need a parking ticket. It doesn't matter what. Something simple. And the guy behind the counter frowns at you. You feel differently. What do I care if he frowned at me? That schnook, I'm never going to see him again in my life. What do I care? No, we do care. Why do we care? Because we all have that sense of, it's a reflection of me. If he frowns at me, it's a reflection of me. It must be a reflection of me. No, it's not a reflection of me. He had a bad day. He's a frowny person. It has nothing to do with me. But we don't live that way. Our logic says that. Our emotions don't. So we all live this balance between the three. Hashem, me, and society. And we have to shift that balance to me and Hashem. And I say it in that order because I think it's more realistic, the me than Hashem. Eventually we'll get to that level of Hashem. Right now I think we have to work on that level of me. What did we say today? We discussed what am I worth? And we discussed who says what I'm worth. We discussed Lashon Hara and Ayin Hara. We discussed the importance of seeing the positive in ourselves. We discussed the capacity to say, stop focusing on the negative, you've said that already. We discussed the importance of being able to see the positive. We discussed I am important, the realization that I am an important person. David HaMelech reaches frustration because he wants something that he cannot attain. Hashem tells him, no, you are important. Tov yom b'chatzerecha, what you do is important. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't want to die because he appreciates what he does. What I'm doing is important. Yosef HaTzadik reaches a point where he's about to fall and be destroyed. And then how does he get out of it? He says, our parsha. Einenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni. You know, there's no one bigger here than me. I have a role in this world that no one else can fulfill. And we have to remind ourselves that in the morning. Einenu gadol b'bayit hazeh mimeni. There's no one bigger than me. I have to accomplish it. There's no one here that can do what I can do, and I have to do it. And finally, not to aspire for what I cannot do. My aspirations have to be in line with what I can't do. I cannot be frustrated. I can't be frustrated by things that I can't do more. I told a story earlier this week about a student of mine. I told you I was having a tough week. I was hardening myself. So one of the things that my Yetzer Hara, and we have to recognize it for what it is, my Yetzer Hara tried to arouse against me, was a story from my past, a student who came to me, and in our conversation I tried to help him as best I could, and a while after our conversation he committed suicide. It's not fun, right? But in all honesty, I couldn't have done better than I did in that time. I don't think I could have done better. I advised him to go to other people. I tried to get him to go to other people. He refused to go to other people. And he wasn't my responsibility. There's a limit to what you can do. What?
That it was a student?
It wasn't a student here, but it was a student. This goes back to my history. So it takes a certain honesty to be able to say, it's not my fault beyond a certain point. I feel terrible he committed suicide. I feel terrible he didn't go to get other counseling. I wish I would have known then what I know now, because then maybe I could have helped him better. Maybe. But I didn't. So I did the best I could for the stage I was in. And I can't expect myself to accomplish something which I can't. And I can't be hard on myself for not having accomplished something which I couldn't. Part of happiness is that honesty, that capacity to look at it and say, you know, I couldn't have done better. I would have wanted a better result, but it's not my fault that there wasn't a better result. I couldn't have done better. And then we said, what happens when I could have done better? So then we said, well, there's this balance. We have a choice. What are we going to focus on? Yes, there are things that need perfection. Yes, there are things that are improper. But that doesn't mean that's who I am. I am a person who has many aspects to himself, and therefore there's a lot of positive, and there are also things that are negative, and I have to work on the negative. But that doesn't mean I'm all negative. That just means I have to work on it. And there's that lashon hara, that tendency to look in a fool's manner and say, but that's me. No, that isn't me. We have to learn to bury the past and look forward. And we discussed that it is our choice what we focus on. And we have to focus on the positive in ourselves and the positive in our future. We discussed that at the end of the day, we also have to know that there is that positive spark. When it comes to Hashem, we are the most cherished being on the planet. Hashem loves us more than we love ourselves. And every day He gives us renewed confidence. Every day He gives us a new start. Rabba munatecha. So we have to be open to that ourselves. And take that new start and start moving forward. Besimcha. Laila tov.